the comparison provisions of Article 1. At some point, we'll return to the articles that we went through yesterday, and my plan would be to try to adopt identical or nearly identical provisions. I'd like to do it as a page rather than each item have a motion, just to move us along a little quicker. But if there is any one that anybody objects to, we can just put that one on hold if you want to let me know. Right? So why don't we start with Article 1, which is the licensing article.
Madam Chair, I will start, and Ms. White will continue later on in this article. Section 1 is county fees for background studies. This is a house-only provision, and it allows the county agencies to charge a licensing inspection fee for corporate license holders for the actual cost of inspections. It limits the fee to $500 annually. Section 2, the House provides for a fee increase from $500 to $750. The Senate does not have that provision. It adds that an applicant for a license to provide supported employment or crisis respite services has to submit a single application fee, and it permits a license holder to provide home and community-based waivered services for up to 3 individuals with developmental disabilities in up to each of 10 counties without obtaining a separate license. Sections 3 through 17 are house-only provisions that provide for license fee increases. I can go through each of those programs if you would like.
Well, I think we noticed on the spreadsheet that there were those differences, so I think there'll be spreadsheet issues.
Okay.
We'll be resolved through that mechanism.
Section 18 increases adult foster care license capacity to a fifth bed. Currently, there's a 4-bed capacity, and this house provision only would permit the commissioner to issue a license for up to 5-bed capacity. Limits this authority to issue 5-bed capacity licenses until June 30th, 2011.
And I believe we have an outlier bill on the floor of the Senate regarding this. At some point, we'll ask the staff to help us find those, because provisions like this that don't have any fiscal impact, the Senate sends them as separate bills.
Okay. There are
our bill a little thinner that way.
Madam Chair, there are 3 other sections of this article, 31, 33, and 34, that relate to the increase in adult foster care license capacity. Section 19 is a section that both the House and the Senate have for alternate overnight supervision technology in adult foster homes. It allows in certain circumstances for adult foster homes to function without supervision in the nighttime hours, as long as there's technology available to alert the license holder that there are problems in the facility.
Madam Chair and members, the next is a house-only provision, Section 20. And actually, Section 20, 21, 22, 23, and 24 all deal with the shifting the responsibility to perform background studies from the county to the Commissioner of Human Services. The Senate did not pick up this Section 20 related to this issue. Staff recommends, if you're going to do this, that we do pick up that section. So that brings us to House Section 25, Senate Section 7. This also relates to the shift of the background studies, but in addition to that, it requires the commissioner to recover the cost of the background studies through a fee of no more than $20. Charged to the license holder. Section 26 is a house-only provision, and it instructs the commissioner to recover the cost of background studies for private adoptions through a fee of no more than $70. And the fee is to be charged to the adoption agency. House Section 27, 28, 29, and 30 are identical to Senate Section 8, 9, 10, and 11. And again, these relate to shifting the responsibility to perform background studies for adult foster care from the county to the Commissioner of Human Services. House-only Section 31 provides that if there is a legislative rate reduction, the commissioner may issue adult foster care licenses that permit five adults. The Senate does have a bill that's traveling separately. There's not a formal Senate position because it hasn't passed the Senate floor, but Senate File 1155 passed out of the Finance Committee yesterday. House Section 32 is a House-only provision, and it instructs the commissioner to retain 5% of earned federal funds in order to reduce licensing fees for children's mental health residential treatment programs. House-only Section 33 requires a negotiation of the per diem cost when a provider seeks to increase the capacity to five persons that reflects the legislative rate reductions. Again, this is a section that is in Senate File 1155. And the provisions that are in 1155 are identical to the House language. House-only Section 34, it's another provision that is identical to Senate File 1155. It requires the commissioner to seek a waiver, federal waiver, to allow licensed adult foster care homes to provide residential services for up to five individuals. Section 35 is this House only, provides, or it's the repealers, and it repeals, paragraph A repeals an obsolete subdivision. Again, this repealer is in Senate File 1155. And then the paragraph B repeals rules related to a requirement that household members and caregivers be free from communicable diseases.
Any questions? Okay, then let's move to Article 3.
Madam Chair, Article 3 is a House-only provision related to child support enforcement. It provides clarifying language for collection of child support arrears. Currently, law allows a 20% income withhold. It also permits the court to order a specific amount, and this language clarifies that it can be one or the other. It cannot be both the 20% income withhold and the exact amount the court has ordered. And that's true for all three provisions.
Are there any questions? Okay, if not, let's move on to Article 4.
Madam Chair, Article 4 is state-operated services. Section 1, House, Section 1, Senate are identical regarding the cost of care and defines charge for services as the usual and customary fees charged for services provided to clients. House Section 2, Senate Section 2 are identical. It defines state-operated community-based services. House Section 3, Senate Section 3 are identical. It defines health plan company and says that it does not include just the meaning given in 62Q, but also includes a demonstration provider, a county-based purchasing plan, and a children's mental health collaborative. House Section 4, Senate Section 4, clients in state-operated community-based programs, requires the commissioner to determine what services a client's health plan will cover. The House and Senate language are a little bit different, but they achieve the same goal, and the staff recommends the Senate language. House Section 5, Senate Section 5, clients served by regional treatment centers or nursing homes, requires the commissioner to determine what part of the cost of care the client has the ability to pay, and lists what the client needs to do to show the commissioner that the client cannot pay. House and Senate language is a little bit different, but it achieves the same goal, and the staff recommends the Senate language. House Section 6, Senate Section 6 are identical regarding the relative's responsibility for the cost of care and community-based services. House Section 7, Senate Section 7 are identical, and it strikes the requirement that relatives must make monthly payments to the state for their cost of care.
Senate only Section 8 requires counties to contribute to the cost of care for individuals in the MEDO program. House Section 8, Senate Section 9 are identical. They define terms in the Minnesota Sex Offender Program chapter of law. House Section 9, Senate Section 10 are identical. These again define terms in the Minnesota Sex Offender Program chapter of law, and so does House Section 10. Senate Section 11 define terms related to the cost of care. They're identical. House Section 11, Senate Section 12 define terms related to local social services agency. They're identical. House Section 12, Senate Section 13 relate to the payment for care and treatment determination in the Minnesota Sex Offender Program. Subdivision 1, the House and Senate, they're worded differently, but they do the same thing. Staff recommends Senate. Subdivision 2, relates to rulemaking authority to determine the client's ability to pay for the cost of care. Those rules are already established, so the Senate recommends that the commissioner use the existing rules. And as a result, the staff recommends a Senate language. And Subdivision 3 related to permits the commissioner to recover the cost of care provided in the sex offender program. That's identical. House Section 13, Senate Section 14 relate to the payment for care, order, and action. There's grammatical differences. Staff recommends a Senate. Section 14, Senate Section 15 relate to claims against the estate of a deceased client from the sex offender program. There's technical and grammatical differences, and the staff recommends the Senate. House Section 15, Senate Section 16 relates to the liability of the county and reimbursement for the cost of care. There's grammatical differences and incorrect reference. Staff recommends the Senate. Section 17 is a Senate-only provision. It provides that the MEDO program is statewide and must provide an array of community-based services with sufficient levels of care and a sufficient number of specialists to ensure that the individuals receive appropriate care. Section 18 is a Senate-only provision, and it requires the development of community-based mental health services for patients committed to ANOCA RTC. Commissioners required to develop community-based services to transform the current services provided to patients at ANOCA in 16 or fewer bed facilities. And the transition planning must be done by October 1st of 2009 with a report to the legislature by November 30th of 2009. And semi-annual progress reports until the transition is completed. The individuals working in the community-based services facilities are considered state employees. House Section 16, Senate Section 19 provide the repealers, and these sections are identical.
Are there any questions? Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just had a question about that last section, 18. And if you had, or if someone could answer who the community partners might be in the development of that plan, who might be included in that development?
I believe the counties would be included. I'm not sure if there were other partners that were anticipated employees, I'm assuming, would also be a partner.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
But it isn't like we're inventing somebody brand new to come in to the deal here.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay, then why don't we move on to...
One other question. I'm sorry. Were you asking about the counties? And do we know what their counties, what that cost is going to be to the counties? Did they testify in the Senate about that? On the MITO program?
On the MITO program?
Yeah.
No, they did talk to me about it, though, and asked if it could be delayed, and we did delay it for 6 months. The idea is to give them a little bit more time to get placements in the community for residents in the MITO program. The MITO program is not intended to be a permanent placement, and we've had people who have lived there for as long as 12 years. So the idea behind the whole reorganization is to create more community-based facilities, to draw down FFP, and to work more closely with the counties. One, to prevent placements by the use of more behavioral interventionists that are paid for by the state, to make sure that behaviors are not escalating to the point where a commitment to the MITO program is necessary. And number two, when a commitment does take place, to be working with the counties to get that individual into an appropriate community placement earlier.
And so, Madam Chair, so do we have the number of behavioral interventionists funded by the state that we're going to need to do that, especially if we go through with this budget?
I think that there probably is someone here from the department that could tell us how many we have now. Part of the issue is that they're not always called on by the counties. And yet every one of these individuals has a case manager and should know when behaviors are escalating and one would be needed. But the language that we have here in Section 17 of the Senate bill directs the department to make sure that there are enough of those behavioral interventionists to meet the needs that the counties would have.
And just one more question. So the counties wanted a delay. Are they supportive of the provision with a delay, or are they accepting the fact that it's going to happen with a delay?
Representative Thiessen, I don't think anybody really wants to have a cut or more costs, but the provisions in the MITO section do mirror what we do today in Anoka. So I think it would be fair to say it's not a big surprise.
Okay. Well, I'm not sure. That may be all I'm going to get. So, okay, let's move on.
Next, we would move to Article 5.
Madam Chair and members, the Article 5 is part of the Health Department provisions. Section 1. Is house only, and it would require coverage for autism spectrum disorders. The Senate has a bill moving separately at 312. Senate file 312, and I think that's in finance right now. Sections 2 through 5 are house only, and this deals with the health information technology changes. The Senate has a bill also in finance, 1890, moving separately. These sections deal with changes that are trying to align the state health improvement technology plan with the federal changes that came out this year, including some changes to the revolving account and loan program. Sections 6 and 7 are house only. The Senate also has Senate file 1099, which I think is also in finance. These sections direct the health department to, in consultation with others, to create develop a uniform formulary exception form and then have provisions for requiring health providers to use the form and group purchasers to accept it. Section 8 is house, there's Section 1 in the Senate is Senate only, and that is dealing with the licensed birthing centers as essential community providers. Section 8 is House only, and that is medication therapy management requirements. Section 9 is identical in the House and the Senate, dealing with hospital fees. Section 7 in the Senate is Senate only language. This is language that modifies the Health Professional Education Loan Forgiveness Program. House Section 10 and Senate Section 8 are identical. That's the vital records surcharge becoming permanent at $4. Senate Section 9 is Senate only, and that is the licensing of birthing centers. House Section 11 and Senate Section 37 are identical. That's the duplicate license fee for occupational therapists. And House Section 12 is a repealer of healthcare reform provision from last year that would require the health department to design an essential benefits set.
Madam Chair.
Are there questions, Representative Thiessen?
Just Section 7, which is the loan forgiveness. Can you just explain a little bit more what for the hospital pediatric psych units?
What section are you asking about?
Section 7 of the Senate. Sounds like a good thing.
We had only one bill this year that was requesting more loan forgiveness. We didn't have any funding for it, so we did apply it to the stimulus money that would be available, and it had to do with providing more loan forgiveness for people working in mental health areas. The federal funds are not allowed to be used for hospital personnel, only for personnel that would be working in the community. So when you see the stimulus language, that is in the Senate file. But we did add this language to the existing loan forgiveness law regarding hospital pediatric psychiatric personnel, so that that type of personnel could be considered for loan forgiveness in our regular state loan forgiveness program. This was a Vandeveer bill brought because of difficulties a constituent was having getting services for their child. Are there any other questions on this section? Okay, then let's move on to Article 6. I guess we don't have that one yet, so we will move on then to Article 8.
Madam Chair, Article 8 is chemical and mental health. Sections 1 through 4, 15 through 18, 20 and 21 and 27 are all related to adding licensed professional counselors to the definition of mental health professionals for purposes of medical assistance reimbursement. Section 5 is a House-only provision dealing with admission criteria for children with severe emotional disturbance. It provides that the county board is to determine the level of care when county
funds. Can we just stop you for a minute? We don't remember having a tracking line for the professional counselors being licensed. Is that in the House tracking somewhere? Because it did have a general fund cost.
I believe that the way the language was worded, that the intent is that it will not have any cost to the state, because one of the provisions in this article instructs the commissioner to adjust the rates paid to all mental health professionals to offset any cost there would be to adding licensed professional counselors.
Well, then there would be a cost in our human services programs. I mean, somehow this isn't going to happen for free. Representative Abler?
Madam Chair, there's I'm sorry I was late. I was at my day job. But there's to this point, there's three provisions in there which would attempt to reduce the cost to zero. The first is hearing from the rural ones that the cost is, I think, 30-something thousand the first year and 100 the second, something like that. Hearing from them, they think that they'll reduce suicides and hospitalizations because some of the areas are underserved. The first paragraph that's there instructs the commissioner to consider that when they write the fiscal note, part of your struggle, because it's like each one of those was worth $10,000 or $20,000 apiece, some $2,000 a night, as you well know. And the second instruction is going to look to a post, and Mr. Zackel was said we can't afford to save any more money because everything that saves money costs more, and so they weren't buying that argument. The second element of that is to do a, they should do a post review of hospitalizations to see how many were improperly done and work on some best practices. And the third thing is if they still need the money, there's $23 million some dollars paid annually to mental health professionals under that section. The $30,000 would be about a tenth of a percent or something in that range of if you took the extra $100,000 or $30,000 out of the whole pot, it'd be between a tenth and a quarter of a percent. And that's how it becomes neutral for sure with that third element.
So, Representative Abler, does the House have a fiscal note that shows a zero cost?
Well, the language would make it have a fiscal, because it would take out of the existing pot of money. So,
well, then you would still need to track it and show where you're getting the money.
Well, fair enough. It was added on the floor.
Okay. Any other questions on this item? On then. Continue.
Madam Chair, Section 6 is a House-only provision. It defines placing authority as a county prepaid health plan or tribal governing board. Section 7 is a House-only provision. Requires measurement of compliance with Minnesota rules governing chemical health, chemical dependency care. Section 8, House-only. Local agencies, it removes the responsibility from the counties for negotiating provider rates. Section 9 is House only, and it states that counties do not have to pay the state for the county sheriff's services when the payment is made according to a section that deals with American Indian Services. Section 10 is a House only section, and it gives the commissioner authority to select vendors and negotiate rates. Section 11 is a House-only section, and it requires the eligible vendors of chemical dependency treatment to have rules that prohibit residents from bringing chemicals into the facility or using chemicals in the facility. House Section 12 is a House-only section. It removes responsibility from the tribes for selecting vendors and negotiating rates for chemical dependency treatment. Section 13 is House statutory language. Senate uses rider language. To freeze rates, the Senate rider freezes rates at 185% of the average rate until June 30th, 2013 for use of consolidated chemical dependency treatment funds. The House states that the rates cannot exceed 185% of the average rate for calendar year 2010, and after July 2011, it cannot exceed 160% of the average rate. Section 14 is a House-only section. It requires the commissioner to consult with stakeholders and present a report regarding the new rate methodology for use of chemical dependency treatment funds. Skipping to Section 19, it's a House-only section, residential services for children with severe emotional disturbances. This section clarifies that medical assistance covers rehabilitative services provided by a residential facility under contract with the county or an Indian tribe. Skipping to Section 22, treatment foster care services. These are identical provisions in the House and the Senate, delaying the effective date of the services until July 1, 2011. The next section is Senate Section 2. It's Senate only. It excludes medical assistance reimbursement for children's therapeutic services and supports treatment by multiple providers within the same agency at the same clock time. Section 23 is House only. It allows the commissioner to provide to approve a crisis response provider that's unable to provide mobile crisis intervention services 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Section 24 is House only, sets out payment responsibilities for residential treatment services for children with severe emotional disturbance. Section 25 is House only, provides an effective date of November 1, 2010, if there is federal approval for MA to cover medically necessary intensive non-residential rehabilitative mental health services. Section 26 is House only. It increases the rate for partial hospitalization for children to the same rate as that paid for adults, effective January 1, 2010. And that takes us to Section 29, which Ms. Kavaner will address.
Just a minute before we do that. On this House Section 26 regarding reimbursement rates for children, is that on the tracking sheet also someplace?
I think this might be the governor's recommendation for
Is it 692 and 693?
Maybe you can just point it out to us later where it is if you can want to find it.
692 and 693, I think.
We think it's the governor's should be in here.
It's the governor's rec. Where we just did the savings, they did the spending.
All right, thank you.
Madam Chair and members, page 7, House Section 29, Senate Article 10, Section 87 establishes a joint task force on autism spectrum disorder. And there are several differences in the language. Would you like me to go through that now? Or?
No, I think people can.
House Section 30 is a House-only provision. It imposes a 5-year moratorium on the sale of surplus land surrounding the Anoka Metro Regional Treatment Center. It's an immediate effective date. House Section 31 and Senate Section 3 establish the State-County Chemical Health Care Home Pilot Project. Subdivisions 1, there's several language differences. Subdivision 2, there's differences in the language, too, related to the report being provided to the legislature. Oh, actually, that relates to the work group. And subdivision 3, there's some changes related to the report to the legislature. And subdivision 4, the House has an unspecified expiration date for the projects, and the Senate expires the pilots on June 30th of 2011. That's the end of that article.
And so maybe on this chemical health care home pilot project, we can ask the folks that have worked on it to see if they can rectify the differences. I'm assuming there's no cost being carried on either the House or the Senate for this, so if the language could get worked out.
We think we like your language better.
Oh.
But why don't we hear from them?
The House thinks they like the Senate language better, so maybe there isn't any work to be done. Why don't we just consult with people and make sure that that's the case, and we'll come back to this later then. Are there any questions on this section?
I'm sure.
Representative Thiessen.
On the multiple providers issue, for children's mental health services, you're excluding billing for multiple providers. I see you're saving, I don't know, $400,000 or so each biennium. What's that going after? And what's the implication?
Well, there's one provider that has when they serve a family, they serve them with two providers, one for the child and one for the parent. And they're the only ones that do that. They're the only ones that bill that way.
Who is that, Madam Chair?
I don't remember. I don't think it matters.
Why, or what type of service is it?
Autism. And we believe, and so their collections against the state are much higher than other providers. We did not think that it was necessary. Other providers use the same person in the home provides instruction to the child and to the parent.
What about the, Madam Chair, do we know what the outcomes are?
There is no difference. Any other questions on this section? In this article, I mean? All right, then let's move on to Article 10.
Madam Chair, Article 10 is a House-only article that creates the State County Results Accountability and Service Delivery Reform Act. Section 1 is the citation. Section 2 defines the terms used in this act. Section 3 establishes the Steering Committee on Performance and Outcome Reforms. It sets out the duties of the committee to develop a uniform process for developing performance and outcome reviews of essential human services programs. It establishes timelines by which the committee must establish a list of essential services, a schedule of program reviews, and develop a process if a county fails to achieve the performance measures. It provides that performance measures, reporting systems, and distribution formulas should be consistent across program areas. It requires the steering committee to consider input from the Redesign Council, which is established in Section 6. Subdivision 2 lists the composition of the committee. Section 4 authorizes the implementation of the service delivery redesign system. Section 5 is the designation of the service delivery authority. Subdivision 1 is the establishment authorization. Subdivision 2 sets out the new state-county governance framework. It permits a county with a population over 55,000 or two or more counties that meet the requirements further on in this section to establish a service delivery authority by resolution of the county boards. Paragraph B lists the elements of the binding agreement that the participating counties must negotiate with the state. Paragraph C requires each county board to determine whether their county will participate in a service delivery authority. Subdivision 3 lists the duties of the service delivery authority. Subdivision 4 provides for the certification of the service delivery authority and lists the requirements that must be met in order to be certified. Subdivision 5 permits a board of county commissioners to act as a service delivery authority on its own if there's a population of 55,000 or more. Subdivision 2 lists the duties of the council. Section 7 is the private sector funding. It permits the county to accept private sector funds to help implement the redesign. And Section 8 is an appropriation of $35,000 for the biennium.
And does this have anything to do with county aid? Is there any reference to county aid in here?
No.
So what is the triggering mechanism if counties don't want to form these units?
Madam Chair, there's no triggering mechanism.
So it's just a suggestion that they do this and tells them what to do if they want to do it, but they don't have to do it?
They don't have to do it. I think they're going to want it. Many of them are doing it already, but it gives them more. There's other benefits to the counties. They get more flexibility in how they deliver their services under the language.
Senator Lurie.
Madam Chair, I'm just reading this for the first time, too. The Senate didn't do it, and in Section 5, Subdivision 7, there are commissioner remedies. Commissioner may submit to the council.
What page are you on?
I'm on page R7-A10. I was just reading.
What lines are you on?
What line? 291.3.
That, Madam Chair, that section deals with if one of these is formed, and how these are formed is actually contracts between the state and the various counties that are going to include performance measures, which are also discussed above in the section. If those aren't met, then remedies would be put in place to make sure that they start to meet, that the counties who participate in one of these service delivery authorities actually meet their performance outcomes.
And Representative Thiessen, what line do we find the remedies on?
There's a, if you look up in, I don't have, well, I'm looking at the, actually at the, if you look up at it's on page 286. That those are going to be, there's in section, whatever section that is, section 3, the performance and outcome measures, there's the development of them, although that's, and this is Representative Loeffler's language, but there's a there's a steering committee that's going to develop uniform performance measures and remedies across all of our programs for the counties. This has nothing to do with whether they enter a service authority or not, but that is where you'll find how those remedies will be developed. There's really two parts to this. One is the development of the performance measures, and the second is the development of this advisory board where the counties and state actually sit down and work out arrangements, which aren't just agreements among the counties, but among the counties and the state about what they're going to be held accountable for. And the other remedies will be what will be set forth in the contracts that the state and, and these counties enter into.
Well, I still don't find what the... I find what they're doing, but I don't find what the remedies are here.
There aren't any remedies specifically set forth. Those are going to be developed as part of this process.
Are there other questions? Senator Rosen?
Is this the language that has been worked on by the Minnesota counties and a working group that's been working on this?
Yes, Madam Chair, yes.
Representative Abler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Did the Senate work on this at all? Did they hear the governor's proposal with this 15 deal and the Wilkin proposal?
Representative Abler, it was heard in the Health, Housing, and Family Security Policy Committee, and it died on a bipartisan vote.
Madam Chair, it was pulled. It didn't die. We didn't vote on it. They didn't have the language ready when they presented it, and they said that they were going to continue working on it. My recollection is they pulled it and didn't push it to a vote.
It was laid over on a bipartisan vote, technicality, I guess. We believed at one point it was going to be reconsidered, but it didn't happen. So,
thank you.
Not being the author of the bill, I can't tell you what happened.
That's helpful.
Exactly.
Thank you.
I guess at some point I think we'd like to hear from the department about this language. I'm not sure if there's anybody here right now. We can arrange to do this later if there isn't anyone here right now. I think we'd like to hear from them about it.
Madam Chair, I'd also like to hear from the counties if the department's going to come and comment on this.
That's fine. Any other questions? Okay. And let's go on to Article 11.
Madam Chair, Article 11 is the House Public Health Article and the Senate Department of Health, Article 5. House Section 1 and Senate Section 2 deal with well management fees. These are identical, and they get rid of the exemption for the fee for monitoring wells owned by a federal agency, state agency, or local unit of government. House Section 2 and Senate Section 3 are identical. They increase certain fees related to X-ray equipment at healthcare facilities. House Section 3, Senate Section 4 are identical. They modify the amount of late fees for registration applications related to X-ray equipment. House Section 4, Senate Section 5 are identical, and they increase the fees for public pools and spas. Senate Section 7, Senate only, and I believe we've done that in another section. That was in section, this makes a modification to the professional education loan forgiveness program that I think was discussed in another article.
So does it need to be in both articles?
No.
All right, so which, you can tell us maybe which one it should be in when we come back to it.
House Section 5 is a House-only article, and the Senate has this in a separate bill, which is currently in finance, and this increases the fee to the newborn screening program from $101 to $105. This is to pay for a program, educational program for families that have a deaf or hard of hearing child. House Section 6 and Senate Section 10 deal with the license for youth camps, and this is being moved to the Chapter 157 that deals with food, beverage, and lodging establishments. It's identical in both Senate and House. House Section 7 and Senate Section 11 make a conforming change to the change with youth camps. This is identical. House Sections 8 to 11 and Senate Sections 12 to 15, these are identical, and they all deal with changes in the definitions that are part of the Lead Poisoning Prevention Act. And House Section 12 to 16 and Senate Section 16 to 20 make minor changes to the Lead Prevention Act as well, and these are all identical. House Section 17 is House only, and this removes the name grantee for the swab team services. It also modifies the services that the grantee is required to provide under the program. It also requires that the projects provide certain matching funds to receive priority for grant funding under the program. House Section 18 is House only, but this language is in our Senate File 1512, which is in finance, and this requires the commissioner to contract with a nonprofit to provide services for families with children who are deaf or hard of hearing. This goes with the increase in the that fee for the hearing test. House Section 19 to 23 and Senate Section 25 or 21 to 25 make changes to the definition sections in the environmental laboratory certification statutes. And these are all identical. House Section 24 to 34 and Senate Section 26 to 36 make modifications to the environmental laboratory certification process. And these are all identical except for a couple technical differences. House Section 35 and Senate Section 38. These sections make changes to the hearing aid dispenser fees. And the differences here are the Senate increases the fee to $700 for the initial and annual renewal certification for hearing aid dispensers. The Senate increases the exam fee to $500 and specifies that the fee for the practical portion of the exam for audiologist will be $250 each time it's taken, and the Senate adds a surcharge of $550. The House does not increase the fees. The House specifies that the fees are for certified hearing aid dispensers, and the House specifies that the fees charged must reflect the actual costs of administering the program and that the fees may not be increased to cover the cost of investigating allegations against uncertified hearing aid dispensers.
Madam Chair.
Representative Abler.
That section, I'm not sure what the Senate did on that part or if they're aware of some of the challenges.
We accepted the governor's recommendations.
Okay. I think on this one the governor is not fully correct. There's a, just in terms of the net effect on the hearing aid dispensers, it's a tremendous burden on these small businesses. These are little. There's about 150 of them, I think. There's been some overlap in the department's duties. If they get a complaint about a hearing aid, all those costs get put on the hearing aid dispensers that are certified. Audiologists also do hearing aids, and they don't have to bear all the costs. And it seems inequitable to put on these littler providers. That's the purpose of the policy language you heard last, that their fees should reflect the cost of their business. There's a deficit in the fund of some $100,000, which was carried forward when the two groups were separated. And it's a mess, but it seems to take the fees from whatever is $200 or $300 to $1,000 for these small businesses, why would they want to be certified? And there are some non-certified hearing aid dispensers running around, and they just do their business out of their trunk, and they don't enter into our regulation system, and somehow they get away with it. So that's the matter of the
When we finish this article, I'd like to have some testimony from the department on this issue so that the Senate can understand a little better if we accept the House position what ramifications would be of it.
Yeah, thank you,
because,
Madam,
you know, we can resolve the fee sections of these bills, I would believe, before we get a target. And so if we can do that this weekend, I'd like to do that.
Yeah, great. Thank you.
So let's go on.
House Section 36 and Senate Section 39 are identical, and this adds the definition of youth camp. House Section 37 and Senate Section 40, they increase the fees for food, beverage, and lodging establishments, and the difference here is the House requires the license and fee for for-profit youth camps only, and the Senate requires the license and fee to be applied to all youth camps. House Section 38 and Senate Section 41 exempts concession stands operated in conjunction with school-sponsored events from the license requirements. This is identical. House Section 39 and Senate Section 42 adds a definition of special event recreational camping area to the manufactured home parks and camping areas chapter. This is identical. House Section 40 and Senate Section 43 make a number of modifications to the licensure and fee structure for manufactured home parks and recreational camp areas. The difference here is that the House removes the fee requirements for recreational camping areas, and the Senate does not. And the Senate includes a special events recreational camping area fee, and the House does not include that.
Madam Chair, to that point and the other youth camp thing, I noticed when I was reading the tracking sheets that the Senate showed it as income and not offset by an expense. I thought these fees were all going to be offsetting more work by the department. Do you know that these camping fees are a fee that's increased to go to the general fund, or is there a new staff that's going to be hired?
Madam Chair, Representative Abler, are you speaking? I'm sorry, I'm just getting caught up here. The youth camp licensing and inspection program?
Well, there's two different questions. The latter one I remember specifically about all the campsites with those fees.
Recreational camping area.
Right. I think you showed it as income, as a positive revenue source.
Well, Madam Chair, members, if you refer to page 27 of the spreadsheet, line 16, 13, I believe that this is the item.
For the entry for this provision, you'll see there are two lines actually here, one on 1616.
That's the appropriation line, which would be the new spending that would be taking place with the fee revenue for this activity. And then line 1617 has the fee revenue coming in from the special event camping. And in the short term, at least, or at least for the two bienniums, the way the governor's displayed that, and that's how where the Senate derived these numbers from, shows some excess SGSR spending of $172,000 per biennium for this item. My assumption is that that additional spending would be covered by the SGSR surplus that the Department of Health has.
We could ask them when they come up to talk about the other differences in the bill here, if you'd like, Representative Abler.
Well, I guess now I understand even better. When the House took the fees out, we weren't told there'd be a cost. We thought it was just a revenue-neutral choice that they wouldn't increase some staff, and it's apparently some of the camp people are worried about those fees. And it was in the other committee, so we didn't hear it in the House. So I'm just asking the question. Thank you.
Shall we continue?
House Section 41 and Senate Section 44 create a plan review process for manufactured home parks and recreational camping areas. These sections are identical. House Section 42 and Senate Section 45 make technical changes. These are identical sections. House Section 43 and Senate Section 46 provide requirements for licensed special events, recreational camping areas. These sections are identical. House Section 44 and Senate Section 47 established the Minnesota Colorectal Cancer Screening Prevention Demonstration Project, and there's some minor differences between the House and Senate. Nothing really substantive on that. House Section 45 establishes a heart disease risk screening program. Senate has a bill, Senate File 1990, that's in finance. Section 46 requires the Commissioner of Health to determine whether levels of exposure to PCP in Minneapolis exceeds human health risk limits or maximum contaminant levels for residents, utility workers, and others who handle treated utility poles. This is House only. House Section 47 requires the Commissioner to provide a grant to Hennepin County Medical Center for a one-year pilot project to collect occupational and residential history data from newly diagnosed cancer patients. This is House only. House Section 48 requires the Commissioner to prioritize smoking cessation activities in certain communities. This is House only. Section 49 is House only. This requires the Department of Public Safety to work with the Minnesota Ambulance Association to create a medical response unit reimbursement pilot program. We do have a Senate file that's traveling separately that's in finance. And House Section 50 and Senate Section 48 are the repealers, and these sections are identical.
So, our staff is wondering on Section 47, feasibility project for cancer surveillance, if this has any cost to it. Representative Clark.
That's my provision, and we are actually just asking the health department to have one of their persons that are already doing work in a specific part of their agency to do this work, to transfer that money over to Hennepin County to do that work. So there's no change in that.
There might not be any new revenue needed, but I do believe you need to show it on your spreadsheet as a transfer out of the agency and a grant to somebody here.
Yeah, you're right. Not sure yet.
Are there any other questions before we ask if there's someone from the Department of Health come up and answer some questions? Okay, why don't we do that now then in regard to this section on fees?
Madam Chair, members, Barb Julich, Department of Health. I can probably answer some fiscal questions, but we have calls into some policy staff that maybe could answer other questions.
Okay.
Soon, hopefully.
All right. Well, if we need to come back to this, you can just let us know. I think the first question is in regard to the fees that are requested in the governor's budget for the audiology area. The House didn't take those recommendations, and so I think we'd just like to know what would happen if we don't take those recommendations in regard to the work of the department in this area.
Madam Chair and members, our current projections for this fee area would have a, for the end of fiscal 09, would have a negative balance of about $234,000. Absent any changes to the fee structure, we'd have a balance of about negative $442,000 at the end of fiscal 11. With the governor's recommendation, the balance would be about negative $29,000 at the end of fiscal 11.
And are there other ways that this fee could be structured to alleviate the deficit without doing it exactly how the governor did it? I know that there's been some suggestions from folks representing the industry about this. Have you had any discussions with them about it?
Madam Chair, we are getting some clarification from staff on that, but we were required, Madam Chair, to do a report on this issue. There was a fee proposed, I believe, last year in 2007 on this issue that looked at it. We did work with our hearing instrument dispenser advisory group to come up with the proposal that's in the governor's budget. And they looked at a variety of different ways to structure the fee. This was the recommendation that came out from that group in terms of how to structure that. So
maybe we could get copies of that report and look at their other options that they looked at as well. Representative Abler?
Madam Chair, I believe part of that report was that some 20%, 23% or something of the work done by the department charged back to the dispensers was related to non-certified hearing aid dispenser costs. And that's the purpose of the language that follows this fee section in the House.
Well, Representative Abler, that is the case in every licensed profession.
I know so.
When somebody's doing something and they're only supposed to be doing it if they're licensed, then that board or that part of the agency investigates, and if they're operating without a license, then they are called to task for that, and the licensing area does pay for that.
And to the same point, Madam Chair, and I
certainly
agree with that. Some of the boards have no capacity to chase unlicensed people, so they just don't do it. They allow the county attorney to go after that if there's unlicensed activities. But especially if money is tight for that particular board, they don't have anybody to really go after it. In this case, the Department of Health has a brochure. It says, call us for any troubles that you have with your hearing aids. And so it generates people calling them. That's part of it. And the other thing is other groups dispense hearing aids as well, and those costs are put only on the hearing aid dispensers. And so it becomes a little bigger question. But at the end of the day, these are little tiny businessmen and women. There's a small number of them. And to raise that kind of, for that percentage of fee, which is doubling and in some cases more than that, I'm not sure they'll bear it. And you may not get the money you want anyway. So it's an ongoing challenge and an ongoing dialogue with the department I've had. So just for information.
Well, Representative Abler, it does seem, based on the testimony of the department, we need to do something. And if the House doesn't feel like what the Senate has done is acceptable, then maybe there's some other proposal that we could agree on. That's my suggestion, that we try to find something else that we could agree on. And maybe looking at some of these other recommendations that their task force worked on, or other ideas that people have, if those could get fiscal noted and we could have those presented to the conference committee so that we could have some discussion about it to try to resolve this part of this section.
Madam Chair, I'm game for that. Thank you.
Right. Then the other area that there are some differences is in regard to the licensing of recreational camping areas, and the House does not include special event recreational camping areas, and they do not include licensing fees for not-for-profit youth camps. So, Ms. Jula, could you tell us what the effect of those two House proposals would be?
Madam Chair, I'll start with the second one, with the youth camps. We estimate that about 70% of the youth camps that we inspect and do inspection activities are nonprofits, so this would reduce the revenue projections for that line item by 70%, which I believe the House is carrying. We would still be required to inspect these facilities. They're still required for licensing, but not required to pay the fee. So we would not be recovering our costs for this activity.
So I didn't quite hear you. You said you would not recover your costs for this activity?
Correct, and that therefore the costs would be subsidized by other license fee programs, basically.
And would it be possible that the fee for the for-profit camps could be increased to make it up, or, I mean, is there some other way to do this other than just exempting the not-for-profit youth camps if the House feels strongly they shouldn't be charged?
Mathematically, yes, that is possible, Madam Chair.
So maybe you could advise us what that might look like. Okay. You get a few minutes to look at that. Mm-hmm. And in regard to the special event recreational camping areas, the House does not include that.
Madam Chair and members, our interpretation of the way their language was structured is basically going back to current law, where we do license and inspect and charge fees for recreational camping areas and special event camping areas. They just wouldn't be accepting the proposed changes. That was the way we were interpreting the amendment that was put on the floor. It reduces the revenue that would have come in for these activities, and therefore we, again, would not be collecting the cost or recovering the cost of our activities for the licensing and inspection of these areas, and other fees would be subsidizing this program.
And what fees would those be? Would those be other recreational camping fees?
Just other programs within the SGSR program, within the SGSR fund.
Well, you must have recreational camping areas that are not called special events.
Yes, Madam Chair, there's probably about 15 special event events. And then there's the recreational camping areas, which are your traditional camping areas.
And does that bring in enough revenue to cover the inspection of special event recreational events?
This is probably getting past my expertise, Madam Chair, but we
Well, maybe you could look into that and get back to us on that also. Are there any other questions? Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On the feasibility, the Section 47 of the pilot project for cancer surveillance, did we talk about that? We haven't yet. It says the Commissioner of Health must provide a grant. Is that on the spreadsheet? And
we just talked about that a minute ago.
Oh, we did. I'm sorry.
Madam Chair.
Representative Abler, did you have another question?
About the camp fees, so don't run off yet.
Right.
Is there a surplus in that special revenue fund now? Or is it in deficit, or is it flat?
Madam Chair, Representative Abler, it's a state government special revenue fund, and for the Department of Health, we are currently running an overall deficit in fiscal year 9, estimated to be about $2.8
million.
Mm-hmm. And then, absent any other changes, by the end of fiscal, we run an annual structural deficit of about 3.7. So, absent any changes at the end of fiscal 11, it would be about 9.7. Under the governor's recommendation, bringing revenues and expenditures more, or recovering costs more in line, it's about $6.5 million deficit at the end of fiscal 11.
think.
So, Representative Abler, we don't expect the department ever to come in and ask for fee increases unless there is a deficit or a deficit soon to be projected in an account.
I think it's helpful to know the fund. And in the camping part, where the fees were increased, was that already in a deficit and this is a cost to recover the costs? And you're doing work already at these other camp places that are writing me. That's not meeting the expense of the inspections. Is that right?
Madam Chair, for the recreational camping and the special event camping, that program is not currently recovering its costs, and that's part of the proposal to change the fee structure.
Thank you. That helps, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Abler. And then maybe just for our clarification in regard to the Minnesota Colorectal Cancer Program, does it make a difference? I mean, I think part of the reason we're both doing this is to try to help the department secure federal funding. Does it make any difference whether we call it a demonstration project or not?
Madam Chair, I don't know if that makes a difference regarding the federal money or not. I think we could get back to you.
All right. We'll wait to hear back from you on that. Any other questions on this section for the Department of Health? Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this might be a question for Assistant Commissioner Lights or somebody else, but I'm looking at Section 48. It's dealing with making smoking cessation a priority within certain populations. And I'm just wondering if the Health Department could share a little bit with us about how that is implemented. And if there's not somebody here.
Is Commissioner Lights still here, or did he run off to? Somebody else is here.
Madam Chair, he is still here, although this is not his program area.
Okay.
Oh.
He'll still make up something.
It looked like somebody else was getting up. Maybe somebody else is here from. Nobody else is getting up from the Department of Health, so maybe we can have that question.
Thank you,
they
Madam
can
Chair.
Get back to us on that question.
Madam Chair.
Representative Clark.
That was brought to us by some constituents that you and I share, and that particular issue, and I'm just thinking that if we're going to have the Health Department discuss, we should probably let them know, too, so they can come and provide their testimony.
All right. Well, I'll trust you to do that.
When do you think we'll do it? I can call.
Representative Huntley.
Maybe we could have the Department of Health answer my real serious question. Was Woodstock a special camping event?
Well, I don't think that was in Minnesota.
It was special.
All right. Any other questions on this section that we can get answers for? Okay. If not, then shall we do Article 12?
Woodstock, as we.
Madam Chair and members, Article 12 is the health-related licensing fees. Almost everything in this article is identical between the House and the Senate. Section 1 for both deals with fees for chiropractors and acupuncturists, and the language is identical. Sections 2 through 9 for both the House and the Senate reduce fees for licensed social workers. The language is identical. Section 10 and 11 in the Senate are Senate-only provisions. Section 10 includes Schedule 4, controlled substances, and the controlled substances prescription electronic reporting system. And Section 11 provides more flexibility to the vendor that the Board of Pharmacy may contract with for the controlled substances prescription electronic reporting system. Section 10 in the House and Section 12 in the Senate are identical, and this is relating to fees for veterinary medicine. Section 11 in the House and 13 in the Senate also deals with licensing for fees for veterinary medicine. They are essentially identical with a technical difference. And we would recommend the House language for that technical difference. Section 12 in the House and 14 in the Senate is also a veterinary medicine fee provision. The language is identical. And Section 13 is the repealer, and the language is identical.
I guess the comment that I would make in regard to these Section 10 and 11 of the Senate only provisions is that these were changes that were requested by the Board of Pharmacy in order to make it really possible for them to proceed with the application for the federal NASPA program and to be able to continue to operate the NASPA program in the future. So,
Madam Chair,
any questions on this section?
I noticed in the tracking sheet that the both the House and Senate took some of the fee increases and decreases, but the Senate didn't appropriate additional money to the boards to spend that money, and in some cases the boards requested money from the governor's position was to be flat, and in the cases in the House they asked the boards put in what they would like. Did you want to chat about that at all? I mentioned the Senate.
Well, I think part of the reason that the Senate didn't do that is because we're taking money out of the special revenue account to balance a budget. And the House is taking a lot more out of the special revenue account, I might add. We have concerns about that level of taking from that account. But I guess we felt reluctant to spend more money out of the accounts if we're taking money to balance a budget.
And Madam Chair, to that point, and I,
Representative Abler,
we haven't had this conversation, so I appreciate you expressing your view. Especially in the case where some boards, like mine, for instance, are going to increase our fees, at least it would be nice if the boards could have the money to spend. And if we're taking the money out in various numbers, which I don't support any of those, but that's a fight I've long lost a couple cycles ago, at least if the boards can get the money they need to operate and do what they deem as their work, that might be the compromise to work toward at least getting that their money so they can function. I know some of the boards, if they don't get their money, will be laying off staff. And so there'd be some boards having increased fees and lower service, and which is an interesting mix.
Well, we did go with the governor's recommendations on that also. Representative Clark.
Madam Chair, our committee heard from every single board. We took testimony from every single board, and then we went through with them and figured out what they needed. And there is a surplus in there of $12 million, and we figured out with them that they need $2 million. Spread out over the boards, and so that's why we took $10 million of that for our budget. So it was based on a careful consideration and testimony from every single board that we had in our committee.
Madam Chair.
I'd just like to have Mr. Godfrey speak to this issue for you, Representative Clark.
Yes, and I'm just going to say, and then we took that $2 million and appropriated it back, so that's why the difference.
Madam Chair, members, just to explain a little bit more background of the Senate position on this, we've been advised by Finance that there was a need for some surplus in the Health Board SGSR account, and typically what they would like to see is they would like to see half of the fund's cash flow stay in surplus, which in the board's case would be about $12 million or $13 million for the coming biennium. And we had originally had a smaller transfer of about $3 million, some changes in fiscal notes and other changes required us to increase it to $6 million, but it still does leave at least, I believe, a quarter of a year worth of surplus in there. And so that kind of explains what the Senate approach was in regards to that. And apparently they need to have some amount available in there just for cash flow purposes and changes in revenue.
So you might want to have a discussion with someone from Finance about that issue, Representative Clark. And Representative Abler, that kind of explains why we did what we did.
Thank you. Madam Chair, one more comment. I think Senator Solon has a comment, too. But if we're not going to give them, if the end of the result of the conference work is we're not going to give the boards more money, I think we shouldn't raise anybody's fees either. That would be the compromise that would be at least sort of fair. And I think Senator Solon had a comment, Madam Chair.
Senator Solon.
Madam Chair, I would also, I just feel there are several of us here, actually, that contribute to this fund. And I just think since this is a special revenue fund, I recognize we sometimes need to dip into it when we have deficits here in the state. But I think that it It's really difficult to consider dipping into it for other spending, for new spending.
We didn't do new spending out of it.
I know the Senate didn't.
I know. That's what I'm pointing out.
Yes.
But I think the House may have.
Yes.
Madam Chair.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question is on the vet medicine board fee increase. And I'm not sure if anybody's here that could speak on that, but there be an increase in the ag budget for veterinarian medicine? And I kind of thought there was, but I'd like to just get that clarified that we're not double dipping.
Well, I don't see anyone who's here, so maybe we can just ask the staff to make that inquiry of
I'd appreciate that.
That division. Okay.
I have
a Rep. Sam Huntley.
Could somebody on the staff explain the Senate sections 10 and 11, what that does?
Yeah, we could do that again. We did talk about it already.
I'm confused.
This is a request from the Board of Pharmacy in regard to applying for the federal NASPER funds. And apparently we need to include the Schedule 4 in the electronic reporting system in order to qualify for that funding. And then we're providing more flexibility to the board in terms of contracting with a vendor. The current law allows them to contract with a vendor to establish the program, but it doesn't allow them to contract with a vendor to operate the program. And this would give them that flexibility.
Somebody would have something
there. Any other questions on this section? Then there's no tab for this, but in the back we have a Senate-only section on licensing of body art professionals.
Senate link.
The last section. It's Article 9. Maybe we can go over that.
Madam Chair, do you want to go through each section or? Basically, what this does is it requires a license of the body art establishments as well as the body art technicians.
Maybe we can just see if there are any questions about this section. Okay.
Madam Chair, may I just
Senator Pretner-Solon
advocate for this, in view of the fact that there is a problem with our blood supply in Minnesota and the fact that we have unlicensed establishments in Minnesota has limited the ability of some people to donate blood for a year after they receive a tattoo. And so that is the reason why we need to have some standards put into place so that we can maintain that blood supply in Minnesota.
Madam Chair.
Representative Abler.
That was heard in the licensing subcommittee in the House, and it failed 3-3 to advance. And I think the people voted no, weren't against it. They just thought it needed some more work, and were concerned about this. I can talk to Senator Solon about it. Maybe there's something that can be worked on about that. But just so you know, that's what the House did.
So maybe there can be some more discussion among members of the House and Senate about that. Now we've received Article 6. I'm turn to that article. We'll go through that article.
Madam Chair, Article 6 and Senate Article 10 is the health care article.
Okay.
Senate sections 1 through 3 authorize HMOs to provide reinsurance or insolvency insurance coverage to health insurers or nonprofit health service plan corporations. This is a Senate-only provision. House Section 1 and Senate Section 4 are identical except for technical differences. These specify the distribution of Merck-related payments in specific dollar amounts tied to the federal limit on Merck spending.
Madam Chair.
Rep. Simtison.
At some point, I'd like more. I don't know if it's as we go through the side-by-sides or now more information on that Sections 1 to 3 and what that all involves, because I don't think we heard that in the House. I don't even know it was a proposal that came into the House, to be honest.
Okay, well, we'll make sure you get some more information then.
I think we should have some public testimony on that one.
I'll make a note. Let's continue.
Madam Chair, House Section 2, Senate Section 5 are identical. This eliminates the $350,000 cap on the amount that DHS can retain for administrative costs for MA reimbursement to school districts.
And I might just make a note that this is also being carried as a different provision in the Education Conference Committee. So before we adopt this provision or do anything with this provision, we need to make sure we're not going to be passing two different things in two different omnibus bills. In the future, it might be a good idea if we don't have identical budget pages in two budget divisions. Continue.
Madam Chair, in House Section 3, Senate Section 6, both bodies eliminate the Patient Incentive Health Program. The House only adds language that would require the Commissioner to develop a methodology and draft legislation to allow the release of summary data on state health care programs claims to research institutions. Then House Section 4, Senate Section 7 are identical. These deal with compliance with federal requirements related to the Public Assistance Reporting Information System. Section 8 is Senate only. This mandates that DHS comply with federal requirements in the ARRA related to American Indians. House Section 5, this is House only language. It would allow the Commissioner of Human Services or county agencies to report to the Department of Revenue any applicant for state programs found to have understated their income. Section 6 is House only. This adds as an outreach activity eligible for an outreach grant targeting geographic areas with high rates of eligible but unenrolled children or racial and ethnic minorities or a health disparity population. House Section 7 and I guess can be compared to Senate File Number 3, which passed the Senate floor. These sections deal with state health care program outreach requirements for schools and school districts. The language is identical except the Senate bill that does not include the House language about requiring districts and charter schools to provide information on obtaining applications. Then House Section 8, Senate Section 10 deal with the dental care demonstration projects. Both the House and the Senate authorize an urgent dental care pilot project, and there are some differences between them. And then the Senate in Subdivision 2 authorizes a pilot project to provide on-site dental services to nursing home residents. The House does not do this. And then the Senate in Subdivision 3 would require the Commissioner to establish a pilot project for to provide care coordination fees to dental providers. Again, the House does not do that. Section 11 is Senate only, requires the Commissioner to implement a demonstration project that would incorporate e-prescribing applications with a clinical information database. Then Senate Section 12, Senate only, this would delay the MA hospital rebasing for an additional three months through March of 2011. And then for another year, it would sort of phase in rebasing at 72.5% of the full value. House Section 9, Senate Section 13, these deal with the inpatient hospital ratable reductions. The level is different. The House reduction is 3%, and the Senate is 1%. There's also a difference in the date to which the reductions apply to managed care plans. And in addition, house-only language, the House reduces payments for certain mental health admissions by 5.2%. Then Senate Section 14, this is Senate-only language. This deals with not reimbursing hospitals for the costs related to hospital-acquired conditions, I think based on a list by the Federal Centers for Medicaid and Medicaid Studies. Then Section 15, this is Senate-only. This section provides a temporary rate increase for hospitals with MA utilization rates equal to or greater than 25%, and this is based on, this is linked to Section 52 of the Senate, which is claiming additional DSH funds through the CPE method. Section 16, it's a Senate-only provision. It requires the commissioner to establish performance thresholds for providers based on the provider peer grouping system. And it, what we'll do would be it would prohibit providers with a combined cost and quality score below that threshold from enrolling as a vendor in the state health care programs and allow some exceptions if this is needed to maintain access to services. It also requires a report to the legislature. In House Section 10, Senate Section 18, these sections are identical except for a technical difference on the effective date. These provide that a bank account that contains personal income or assets or it's used to pay personal expenses is not considered a capital operating asset of a trade or business and therefore not exempt under that category. So this section applies it to the asset limit for persons who are aged, blind, or disabled under MA. Then Section 11 of the House, Section 19 of the Senate, identical except for technical differences. This section establishes that a pooled trust is an available asset unless the trust provides that upon the death of the beneficiary or termination of the trust, DHS is reimbursed for the MA payments. Then House Section 12, Senate Section 20, this again relates to the bank accounts and the use of sort of personal funds. This applies to the asset limit for families and children under MA. Senate Section 21, Senate only. This eliminates the ability of applicants to reduce assets in 3 months before applying by designating burial funds. Provides that excess assets can be reduced by during the month of application by paying bills for healthcare services incurred during certain time periods and requires applicants with excess income as well as excess assets to first spend excess assets to pay healthcare bills. Section 13 is house only. This is makes MA available during a presumptive eligibility period for children under age 19 who appear to meet income requirements based on preliminary information. And it provides that enrollees who are terminated for failure to complete an application or to verify the application can't use this avenue for enrollment for 12 months. House Section 14, this is House only. This reduces the MA asset limit for qualified Medicare beneficiaries to the federal Medicare low-income subsidy program limit. Section 15 is House only. This increases the minimum premium for the MAEPD program from $35 to $50 and increases the percentage of unearned income that needs to be contributed. Then House Section 16, Senate Section 23, deal with MA coverage for treatment of colorectal cancer. It's similar, except the House specifies coverage is through state-only funded MA, and there's a difference in the effective date. The Senate ties it to the demonstration project. House Section 17, Senate Section 24, these sections clarify that expenses incurred for necessary medical or remedial care can be deducted as reasonable expenses. It's identical in both bills. House Section 18, Senate Section 25, these deal with these classify transfers from a pooled trust as prohibited transfers. again, identical in both bills. House Section 19, Senate Section 26 are identical except for a technical difference. These permit the period of ineligibility for an improper transfer to be eliminated if the assets are returned within 12 months. House Section 20, Senate Section 27 are identical except for technical differences. These allow children and pregnant women who are qualified non-citizens to be eligible for MA with federal financial participation. It's tied to the federal SCHIP reauthorization. It also allows pregnant non-citizens who are undocumented and uninsured to receive their postpartum coverage through CHIP funding rather than state-only MA. House Section 21, Senate Section 28 are identical. They exempt pregnant women and children who are qualified non-citizens from the deeming of sponsor income and resources. Then Section 29, this is Senate only. It limits reimbursement for anesthesiology services provided by physicians when the physician directly performs the service. That's paragraph B. Then paragraphs C to F prohibit state program payments to physicians when the payments would be for reportable adverse health events. House Section 22. This is a House-only provision dealing with the Health Services Policy Committee. Paragraph B would require the commissioner to establish a dental subcommittee and specifies what they advise the commissioner on. Paragraph C requires the committee to study linking provider reimbursement to patient participation in a patient-centered decision-making process. Paragraph D requires the committee to monitor and track physician practice patterns to notify physicians with higher than average utilization or costs. And then paragraph E would require this committee to review C-section rates and develop best practices. Senate Section 23, House Section 23 and Senate Sections 30 and 31 limit MA coverage for dental services to adults and children, and basically there are just many changes in this section. Some technical are dealing with coding, others more substantive. Then Senate Section 32, Senate-only provision, it limits reimbursement for anesthesiology services provided by a certified registered nurse anesthetist. Senate Section 33 provides MA coverage for drugs that are prescribed by a physician assistant under contract with a community health board for purposes of communicable disease control. House Section 24, Senate Section 34 have identical intent except for a technical difference. They reduce the pharmacy reimbursement rate from AWP minus 14% to AWP minus 15%. Then Senate Section 35, this is requires the commission to establish a pilot project for an intensive medication program for patients with multiple chronic conditions or high number of medications who are at risk of hospitalizations, higher ER use, and so on. Senate Section 36 requires the commissioner to establish a collaborative psychiatric consultation service. It also requires prior authorization and collaborative psychiatric consultations for certain ADHD, ADD, and psychotropic medications prescribed to children. Then House Section 25, Senate Section 37 both deal with transportation costs, but there are significant differences. The House basically picked up the governor's recommendation increasing the mileage rate for special transportation services for persons needing a wheelchair, reducing the base rate when a wheelchair was not needed. The Senate would modify the special transportation base rates and mileage rates based upon rural-urban commuting areas. Then Section 38 is Senate only. It requires providers of ambulance services to bill MA according to Medicare criteria. Section 39 is Senate only. It prohibits the department from using a broker related to the provision of transportation services in the 11-county metro area using a common carrier or private automobile. Senate Section 40, Senate only, requires prior authorization or decision support for specified diagnostic imaging services. Then House Section 26, Senate Section 41 are identical. This modifies the reimbursement process for school districts that bill DHS for special education services, requires reimbursement based on an interim rate with a settle-up, and also provision of a rate appeal process. House Section 27 is House only. It reinstates MA co-payments of $3 per non-preventive visit, $3 for eyeglasses. Senate Section 42, Senate only, requires enrollees with complex or chronic conditions to select a primary care clinic that is a healthcare home if there are two or more clinics available to that enrollee. Then House Section 28 is House only. It requires DHS in consultation with the Health Department to establish a payment reform demonstration project to reduce hospitalization, emergency room use, high-cost medications and specialty services, and the use of long-term care services. Senate Section 43 requires a demonstration project for MA and GMC enrollees at risk of developing diabetes. This would be done through a podiatry-directed wound care program. Then House Section 29, Senate Section 44 are similar. The section requires the commissioner to accept data from the Social Security Administration as an application for medical assistance. Then House Section 30, Senate Section 45, these sections provide that for purposes of claims against the states, medical assistance does not include Medicare cost-sharing benefits. These are identical except for a technical difference. Then House Section 31, Senate Section 46 modify language related to a state subject to MA claims, establishes a new definition of what's included in the estate of a recipient. They're identical in both bills. Then House Section 32, Senate Section 47, delete the definition of a state that was replaced in the section just preceding this, identical in both bills. House Section 33, Senate Section 48, these sections provide that a claim against the estate of a surviving spouse is payable from the full value of all of the recipient spouse's assets and interests that are part of the estate. These are identical in both bills. House Section 34 and Senate Section 49 provide that for purposes of MA recovery, at the time of death, the recipient spouse has legal title or interest in the undivided whole of all of the property the recipient and surviving spouse own jointly or as marital property during their marriage. This language, during their marriage, this is identical. Then House Section 35, Senate Section 50 allows the commissioner to intervene as a party in any proceeding involving an MA estate recovery. This is identical language. And just should note that House Section 36 deals with PERA nursing home costs, and this will be compared in Article 9, the continuing care article.
Senate Section 51 deals with intergovernmental transfers. It's a Senate only, and it establishes additional MA payments to HCMC and Regents Hospital for outpatient services, affiliated physicians, and the prepaid health plans that are at these facilities. And the state share would come from the IGT to the state from Hennepin County and Ramsey County. Senate Section 52 is Senate only. This requires DHS to apply for additional DSH payments available under the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act. House Section 37 and Senate Section 53 require the commissioner to include in the performance targets that managed care plans and county-based purchasing plans are required to meet in order for the 5% capitation rate withhold to be returned. They would require an inclusion of the plan's reduction in emergency room utilization rate for state health care program enrollees by a measurable rate of 5%. These are identical sections with some technical differences. House Section 38 and Senate Section 54 limit the transfers from the capitation rates for Merck to the total amount transferred in fiscal year 2009. And it provides that any excess must first reduce the amounts transferred from general capitation rates and then proportionally reduce the capitation rates to different geographic groups of counties. These are identical with some minor differences. House Section 39 and Senate Section 55 also deal with Merck and states that beginning July 1, 2009, the capitation rates are increased each year by the lesser of $21,714,000 or an amount equal to the difference between the estimated value of the county group reductions and the limited state set for transfers. These are identical sections. House Section 56 is Senate only, and this is language that carves out the provision of dental services from the PMAP contracts and requires that the services be provided on a fee-for-service basis. Senate Section 57 is Senate only. This requires DHS in determining the MINDO payment rates and risk adjustment methods to consider methods used to determine county allocations for home and county or community-based program participants. Senate Section 58 is Senate only. This states that as a condition of participating in the PMAP contracts, a managed care plan or county-based purchasing plan must either contract or establish a birthing center. House Section 40 and Senate Section 61, these reduce the payment rates for basic care services by 3%. And the differences here is the House excludes medical supplies, prosthetics, lab, and radiology from this reduction. And the Senate excludes inpatient hospitals, family planning, mental health, and dental. And the House reduces the health plan payments beginning January 1, 2010. The Senate reduces it October 1, 2009. And the House has language that specifically prohibits the changes in the health plan provider payment rates to occur until January 1, 2012. The Senate doesn't have this language. Senate Section 59 is Senate only, and this establishes the facility payment rates for cesarean section deliveries without complications, vaginal deliveries with complications, and vaginal deliveries without complications. And this section also establishes the payment rate for the professional services that are related to certain maternity care when provided for a cesarean delivery without complications and a vaginal delivery with complications. House Section 41 and Senate Section 60, these reduce MA payment rates for physician and professional services. The House reduces the rate by 3%, the Senate by 5%. Senate exempts family planning. The House does not. And again, the House reduces the health plan rates to reflect this reduction beginning January 1, 2010. The Senate, it's October 1, 2009. And the House also includes the same language as above that would prohibit the changes in health plan provider payment rates until January 1, 2012. House Section 42 requires the commissioner to administer the MA Critical Access Dental Program within the limits of available appropriations. This is House only. House Section 43 is another House only section, and this would list grounds under which the commissioner is prohibited from designating a dentist or clinic as a critical access dental provider or is required to terminate such a provider's designation. Senate Section 62 requires active participation in a patient-centered decision-making process before authorization is approved or payment reimbursement is provided for a number of specific surgical procedures, the Senate only. House Section 44 and Senate Section 63, this applies the ratable reductions for basic care services and physician and professional services to the GMC. And the same differences that were discussed before are in these sections. Senate Section 64 is Senate only. This makes a conforming change to the change that the Senate has in carving out dental service coverage. Senate Section 65 is a Senate only, and this exempts children who were residing in a foster home or juvenile residential correctional facility from the Minnesota Care eligibility requirements that apply to families with children. Senate Section 66 is a Senate only, and this states that children with families with family income greater than 275% of FPG are eligible for Minnesota Care. Senate Section 67, Senate only, makes a conforming change to some other things that the Senate did, basically allowing the children with incomes greater than 275 to be eligible for Minnesota Care. Senate Section 68 and House Section 45, these are identical. This exempt, and they exempt pregnant women and children who are qualified non-citizens from counting the sponsor income and resources in determining Minnesota Care eligibility. House Section 46 is House only. This makes Minnesota Care available during a presumptive eligibility period for children who appear to meet income requirements on the basis of preliminary information. House Section 47 is House only, and this requires application assistance to be made available to applicants applying online, and requires the commissioner and local agencies to assist enrollees in choosing a managed care organization. House Section 48, House only. This requires the commissioner and local agencies to develop a streamlined and efficient application and enrollment process for MA and Minnesota Care enrollees. And it also requires the commissioners of Human Services and Education to provide recommendations and an implementation plan to the legislature on the creation of an open enrollment process that's tied to the public education system. House Section 49 is House only. This sets up the express lane eligibility. This would require that children who complete an application for educational benefits and indicate an interest in MA or Minnesota Care enrollment, that application would be considered an application for those programs. Senate Section 69 is a Senate only position, and this states that the effective date of coverage for foster care children who are eligible for Minnesota Care will be the first day of the month following the date of termination from the foster care or juvenile residential correctional facility. Senate Section 70 is Senate only, and this states that children in families with income equal to or below 275% of FPG who fail to submit renewal forms and related documentation necessary for verification of continued eligibility in a timely manner will remain eligible for Minnesota Care. Senate Section 71 is Senate only, and this is delayed verification. It would permit a child whose family gross income is less than 90% of the income standard and who meets all other eligibility requirements at the time of application to be determined eligible beginning the month of application. Senate Section 72 permits children in families with income greater than 275% of FPG to remain on Minnesota Care. That's Senate only. Senate Section 73 exempts children with family income equal to or less than 200% from the ESI barrier. Section 74 is Senate only. This would exempt those same children from the four-month barrier. Section 75 is Senate only. It states that any child who is residing in foster care or juvenile residential correctional facility on their 18th birthday is automatically deemed eligible for Minnesota Care upon termination or release from that facility. and they are exempt from the ESI and four-month barriers and from premiums. House Section 50 and Senate Section 76, they apply to the they apply the ratable reduction for basic care services and physician and professional services to the Minnesota Care Program with the same changes and differences that have been discussed earlier. House Section 51 is House only, and this states that effective January 1, 2010, that critical access dental providers will be reimbursed under Minnesota Care at 30% above the payment rate that would otherwise be paid. Currently, that reimbursement level is 50% above the regular rates, and it specifically requires the commissioner to administer this subdivision within the limits of available appropriations. Senate Section 77 is Senate only, and this specifies, again, that the dental coverages covered under Minnesota Care shall be provided on a fee-for-service basis. House Section 52 and Senate Section 78, this requires the commissioner to include in the performance targets that managed care plans and county-based purchasing plans are required to meet in order to get the 5% capitation rate. Withhold back to, they must include a reduction in the plan's emergency room utilization rate. The Senate also requires an additional 3% withhold for the managed care payments. The House doesn't include this provision. And Senate Section 79 and 80, these exempt children with family income equal to or below 200% of FPG from paying premiums. And House Section 53 is a House-only section, and this makes a clarifying change related to the form used to determine compliance with Minnesota Care asset requirement. And Section 81 is Senate-only. This makes a technical change that exempts children from the asset limits. House Section 54 is House-only, and this requires the Commissioner of Finance on September 1 of each odd-numbered year, beginning September 1, 2009, to determine the projected balance in the Health Care Access Fund as of the end of the next biennium. And if the commissioner projects a surplus, then the commissioner is required to reduce the Minnesota Care provider tax rate in 0.1% increments, making the largest reduction consistent with the fund retaining a surplus. Senate Section 82 and House Section 55. This establishes filing requirements for supplemental needs trusts. These are identical sections. House Section 56 and Senate Section 83 clarify that joint and several spousal liability for medical debt includes liability for state claims. These are identical. House Section 57 and Senate Section 54 clarify that the appropriation to the University of Minnesota from the Health Care Access Fund shall be transferred each year from Merck. These are identical sections. House Section 58 is a House only, and it requires the commissioner to develop an implementation plan to consolidate coverage for families and children under MA in Minnesota Care. It requires the commissioner to consider coverage for Minnesota Care enrollees with household incomes greater than 200% to use health savings accounts or health reimbursement arrangements in major medical plans. House Section 59 is House only, and this requires the Commissioner of Human Services to study approaches toward adopting a uniform income methodology for families and children under MA in Minnesota Care. House Section 60 is a House-only section, and it requires the Commissioner of Human Services, in cooperation with the representatives of county agencies, to develop a plan that would require county agencies to administer Minnesota Care. Senate Section 85 is a Senate only, and this makes a technical change in an effective date from last year. Senate Section 86 is a Senate only provision, and this requires the Commissioner of Human Services in consultation with the Commissioner of Health to determine the amount of excess surplus each HMO and county-based purchasing plan as of December 31st, 2008, and for those HMOs and county-based purchasing plans that are determined to have had an excess in surplus, the commissioner is required to reduce the capitation rates paid for administrative costs at an amount equal to, and the language is 33% of the excess for payments made between January 1, 2012 and June 30th, 2013. House Section 61 and Senate Section 88, these require the commissioner to seek federal approval. Both the Senate and the House requires the commissioner to resubmit the federal approval the elimination of depreciation and determining income for self-employed farmers that was passed in 2007. And the Senate also requests federal approval for the change in health care home language that would require that they pick a provider. House Section 62 and Senate Section 89 are repealers, and the House and Senate both repeal 256.962 subdivision 7. This is a renewal. It's the renewal notice for Minnesota Care programs that requiring them to be sent at least 60 and 90 days prior to renewal notice. Senate also repeals Section 62Q.80, Subdivision 1A. This is awarding the grants for community-based health care coverage program. And 256B.137, this is prospective payment for dental services. And another section, 256B69, subdivision 7, that's a dental services demonstration project. And then 256L.17, subdivision 6, which is asset tests for children. That's the end of Article 6.
Are there questions on this article? Representative Abler?
I can go second if somebody else does. To hear the prioritization for radiology and the Senate version, I noticed the money's taken only as a savings in the fee for service, not in the managed plans. Is that correct?
Right. We believe it's being done in the managed care plans, but it's not being done in the fee for service plans. And we had someone come in who said they could do this with one phone call. Provider just makes a phone call. In the past, the department has said this would be more costly to implement than it would save money. But now they have decided that they could contract with ICSI to do this, so there would be savings.
And Madam Chair, I remember we heard in one of the committees one time that we told them to do this, and they didn't quite get around to it.
Yeah, this was about 5-6 years ago maybe now.
Yeah, we heard it in, I think, 07 that they just didn't quite get it done. Understanding that the fee-for-service rates determine, at least to some extent, what they pay them, the PMAP and so on, does Mr. Hoffman take a reduction then to the managed care rates for them managing the radiology services?
We'd have to get some technical assistance from the department to answer this question.
I just would bet they don't.
We don't believe they do, but
yeah,
we believe that the managed care plans have already done this, and so the way it's supposed to work is then they have reduced utilization, and then when they negotiate their rates, they get a lower rate. But whether it has actually happened, I don't know. Maybe we can ask for the department to answer that question when
thank
they
you.
Have someone available to do it.
I think you and I agree on this one, so thank you, and a bunch of us.
Are there any other questions on this section?
Yes,
Madam Chair. Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I had a question about Section 15, which is on page 7 of the summary. And I'm just I'm just wondering if we could just get a little more detail about that. The temporary rate increase for hospitals within a utilization rate equal to or greater than 25%. And I think you were talking specifically about Hennepin County and regions.
Is this House Section 15?
No, Senate.
This has to do with the new DISH dollars that are available under the Stimulus Act. And would allow hospitals that have 25% or more MA utilization rate to get those DISH dollars. There's not a lot of them, so, you know, we couldn't spread it out over all the hospitals in the state or anything like that. It just wouldn't be enough money, but we could get you that list of hospitals if you're interested.
Madam Chair, that would be great. And then I had just one other question about a Senate provision a little further back in the summary sheet. Section 51 on page 21. And it's about the intergovernmental transfers. And if you or our staff could just explain a little bit more about how that's going to work and its intention, I think that would help me understand it a little bit better. Please.
I believe there is a separate bill on this issue in the House that's going to be given a hearing sometime soon. So these are local funds being spent either by Hennepin County or in some cases by regions that we believe could be used to leverage federal funding. And it's not a lot of money. I think the whole thing amounts to maybe $2 million altogether, and would help them to mitigate some of the cuts that they obviously would receive through other parts of the bill. Rep. Sam Huntley on this issue.
Yeah, Madam Chair, there was a dispute between the two counties and the Department of Human Services, but that's been worked out as far as I can tell. And the county, Ramsey County, does make a contribution to Regents Hospital every year. And, of course, Hennepin County also does the same thing for HCMC. So this is a way that we think those two hospitals can get a few extra bucks from the feds.
We think under the law, however, that those transfers would have to be made directly to DHS instead of flowing through those institutions. But you can talk to the folks from Hennepin and Ramsey, Representative Murphy, on your own time to get more information maybe about that.
Of course, Senator Berglund.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. House Section 51, the critical access dental providers. And I was wondering where the cost savings are, how many providers is this going to affect, what the testimony was like.
Well, I can let the House speak for themselves, but I assume it affects all critical access dental providers. Yeah. They're reducing the rate from 50% to 30%, and it's a cost savings they're taking in their bill. And they also do not fund the TAILS, so it's no longer a forecasted program, which I might say makes me especially nervous since we work so hard just about 4 years ago to get it in the base.
Madam Chair, I think this is another one we might want the department to talk about because they did a study and made some conclusions that the program wasn't actually particularly effective in expanding access in rural Minnesota. And so there's a report from the department that says that. You know, I think there's a dispute as to whether...
I think that report is a dispute.
I think there is. But so I would suggest if you want information, you talk to the department about that and Representative Bunn.
Any other questions on this article? If not, then...
Madam Chair, I mean, I think there's probably going to be a lot of questions on different provisions of this article, but I don't know if you want to
Well, a lot of them have to do with money. And so I think until we get a target and reconcile our two spreadsheets in terms of our positions to each other, maybe we could save time by taking those questions at that time.
No, and Madam Chair, and that's fair. I think that there's some policy decisions being made to save money, and you know, depending on the target, we may have to save money. But I don't want to just be doing stuff to save money that's bad policy as well. So,
well, we don't believe we did that.
I'm sure you don't. But we can do it when we get back to that as well. So we can move on now.
Any other questions on this article? If not, I'm going to suggest that right now we take a half-hour break, and when we come back, we will go through the articles and try to adopt identical or nearly identical provisions where the staff has made recommendations. And if there are provisions that you want to have held, if you would be prepared to let us know at that time so that we skip over those provisions. That would make the staff work easier by being able to incorporate certain sections, most of which don't either have to do with money that where we're identical or have to do with provisions that don't relate to money. And maybe at that time also we could take some testimony about the reserve provision that's in the bill that the House had questions about regarding using reserves to help pay for nonprofit, using nonprofit reserves to help pay for other reserve requirements. Does that sound like a good way to go here, folks? All right, with that, we'll just take a brief recess for half. Rep. Sam Huntley.
Madam Chair, the House conference will meet in the retiring room.
That the meeting is recessed for half an hour.